in my kitchen. Prayers ought to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water. And you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Hope you got out to a farmer's market. Can really see fall in full swing right now. There are pomegranates everywhere, lots of persimmons, and there's starting to be good citrus again, and including some local citrus. So it's just a great time of year for eating. I mean, it's always a great time of year for eating local. But if you do eat local, you're really seeing that change in the seasons right now. And my, what a week this was, huh? You still tired from staying up late on Tuesday night? I certainly am. And drank not the whole bottle of champagne by myself, but fairly close. You know, you had to. I was it right about, oh, a little bit before 8 o'clock, put it in the freezer so it would be really cold, put a glass in the refrigerator, and 8:16, they made that announcement, and I popped the cork. So anyway, it has been a really good week, and really busy week. So many events going on. Doesn't slow down at this time of year. Not in wine country, that's for sure. And tonight we're going to talk about an event. I think it's in its fourth year, taking place next Saturday, Artisano. And we'll hear all the details about that. We also have, we're doing two topics tonight. We're also going to be talking about dirt. You know, the stuff you put little seeds in and then your food comes out of it. It's really a magical thing. So we have local writer Robert Cork with us, written a lot of books, and I'm going to make him talk about the bean hole and the quail that you put between lavender, the chicken you put between lavender. But first, and you can chime in on anything, Robert. You don't have to wait till we talk about dirt. But right now I want to introduce Catherine Crouch of Ceres Community Project in Sebastopol, that beautiful location now next to the fire department, and the great Patrick Amio sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Of the bee.
It's a wonderful sculpture. It's so great to have Patrick Amio in town. And then also Thomas Schmidt, executive chef at John Ash & Company, which is going to be the location of Artisano. Yep. So welcome to Mouthful.
Yes, thank you so much. Yeah,
I think, Thomas, this is your first time.
Yeah, it is my first time.
And I know you're returning for at least a second or third time.
It's actually our first time, too. We were invited to be the beneficiary.
No, I mean your first time on Mouthful.
Second or third time on Mouthful. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so let's give a picture of what Artisano is. I know it started 4 years ago, I think, up in Geyserville, I believe.
Yeah, in Geyserville.
Yeah. So when did it move to the Vintners Inn?
Last year was the first year we did it at the Vintners Inn. They wanted a little bit larger location, and in the Vintners at Event Center, we've got a huge space there, and it worked out perfectly.
Uh-huh.
So they asked us to do it again this year.
Okay, and it's something that chooses a beneficiary each year, right?
The first 3 years, it was Slow Food Russian River.
Uh-huh.
And then they decided to make a change. And so we were invited earlier this year to get involved. And it's just a perfect fit for us because it's such a big focus on local food and artisan producers. And we work with a lot of them. So we were thrilled to be asked. And we're really looking forward to it. It's going to
be
a great
fun.
Day.
Okay,
yeah.
So the main event, the Artisano main event, takes place from 12 to 4 in the event center.
Yeah.
And then there's an optional... I mean, you can go to one, you can go to both, or one or the other. Then there's a dinner, a harvest dinner.
Harvest dinner, we do like a family-style three-course meal at John S. Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a lot of fun. I start out with some salads and appetizers and go on to some meats, all local, and our pastry chef makes some desserts afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I love family-style dinners. That's my favorite style.
It's a lot more fun.
Yeah, it is. I hate buffets.
No,
and being, you know, and having things served to you on your own plate—that's nice. But I really love family style.
It's a different ambiance,
exactly.
Different feeling. Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Talk a lot more, and hey, hand me the.
Yeah,
the
we're gonna actually. Yep. We're gonna do our annual gala next year at our garden in Sebastopol, family style.
Oh, great!
Yeah, same reason. It just it just generates more connection and more communication.
Exactly.
And more,
I did my daughter's wedding that way.
Oh, it's great.
And we had 137 people at one long table.
Oh, that's
fabulous. End to end, and it was in someone's garden, a home, private home in West Sebastopol. And we just stretched it all the way through this beautiful garden.
Wow.
And tablecloths. We had like a crossbar on each end so everyone would fit. But so it was one long table. And then I did 18 chickens. And just huge bed of herbs with the chicken on top, and then big platters of other food, and it was just perfect.
Oh, it sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
I think it's very festive.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
And you don't have you don't have to stand in line and carry your own plate and all that. So what happens at Artisano?
It is a celebration of small artisan producers, and I think there's going to be 30 or so wineries this year. And the really cool thing, I think, is these are all wineries that are not available to the public because they don't have tasting rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know a lot of them because it's not my area, but Marie and Mark both say, wow, these are some amazing wineries.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a fabulous chance to come and meet those winemakers and taste their wine. And there's a number of about 6 or 7 different restaurants that will be doing small plates, live music. There's going to be a cheese demo, a sauerkraut demo, a butchering demo, and then a great auction. So there's just a lot to do and some really amazing wineries that you don't usually get a chance to meet and taste.
Uh-huh. And then there's an art element too, right?
Yes.
Auctioning.
Well, there's also, I think, 6 or 8 artists who will be displaying their wares there and have things for sale. They'll have things for sale. All of the food and wine is available for the price of the ticket, so you can come and eat and drink all afternoon.
Exactly.
And, there's a beautiful place to sit outside and patio and indoor. And then we'll be putting on a fabulous auction.
So is this a live auction?
So there'll be a silent auction. And then we're doing it because the venue is large and there's a lot of different spaces in it. It doesn't really lend itself to live auction.
Uh-huh.
But we have 2 fabulous items that we're going to do as a golden ticket raffle. So we're only going to sell, I think, 100 raffle tickets. And one is a 48-foot sailboat. You can have a party of 10 all afternoon on the bay in San Francisco, catered. And the other is a fabulous house that sleeps 10 right on the shore at Lake Tahoe. So we'll be doing a golden ticket raffle for those, and then there'll be a large silent auction, maybe 70 items or so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And almost all the wineries are donating bottles, and the restaurants are donating, and the artists are donating all to the auction. Then we'll pulling in other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be a really fun afternoon.
Do you know what you're going to be fixing yet for the...
Well, I'm going to fix at the daytime event. I'm going to do some fresh sunchokes out of the garden. I'm going to make sunchoke raviolis with the sage butter.
Mm-hmm.
And the dry cook kitchen will be there doing something. And Diavolo.
Peter Lowell's.
Yeah, Peter Lowell. There's a bunch of people coming out. Mm-hmm. And it'll be a lot of fun. Like you were saying, just snack all afternoon and have a glass of wine here.
Bunch of cheesemakers.
Uh-huh.
Wild Brine is going to have their sauerkraut there. So there'll be lots of tasting.
Uh-huh. And all local.
And then for the harvest dinner, what are you going to cook?
Harvest dinner, we're doing first a salad of escarole with also roasted sunchokes. And I'm doing some red beet cured salmon. So wild salmon.
That's
just,
right.
And how
red beet cured? Tell me.
I do a regular, like a Gravlax cure, salt, sugar, and pepper. Then I add grated fresh red beets to it on both sides. So it turns like a deep purple
deep,
hue,
yeah,
really
sure.
beautiful. And it flavors it a little bit more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of fresh horseradish with that. What else can I do? I'm going to do for the main course, I have Devil's Gulch rabbits. We're going to braise those with some thyme. And then we have some potato gnocchi I'm going to be making. Mm-hmm. Desserts, Casey's, our pastry chef's making cranberry, I think a shortcake or bread pudding.
Cranberry bread pudding, that's right. Yeah, I remember when it, because I wrote about it this week. Cranberry bread pudding.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff on there.
Uh-huh.
And it's a lot of fun to do that. Like I said, the family style afterwards, just everybody's talking about it and they come out and explain what they're eating and it's just fun. Mm.
So we should probably say why Sirius has been chosen and what Sirius does. I mean, I think a lot of Mouthful listeners know, and you guys are just so incredibly successful. I love the story of Sirius.
Thank you so much. Well, we are primary, so sometimes complicated to talk about, but we do two main things. We bring teens in the kitchen. We have kids from 35 schools around Sonoma County, about 125 kids active now in the program.
Oh, I didn't know you had that. I thought they were all from Annaly.
Oh, no, no. They've never all been from Annaly. In fact, we didn't have any kids from Annaly until a while in.
Okay.
So kids from as far away as Cloverdale, but all of the high schools. And they are now working in our half-acre food production garden and in the commercial kitchen, in the garden 3 afternoons a week, the kitchen 4 afternoons a week. They're all volunteers. And what they do is grow food for our kitchen and prepare meals for people all over Sonoma County who are dealing with serious illness.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the meals are local, organic, whole food, very nutrient-rich. We make everything from scratch, including our sauerkraut and broth and all that stuff. And the kids learn about cooking and eating healthy food, but most importantly, they learn about service and their capacity to make a difference for others. And we've provided now just about 140,000 free meals in the last 5 years.
And these are delivered.
Delivered. So we have this whole team of army of delivery angels who drive all over, up to Casadero and out to Sonoma and all over the place to take meals to people. And just one little story, two stories. One, we've had clients in the kitchen for the last 2 weeks. So every afternoon, the kids take a half an hour break, and we do nutrition education. We talk about why local food matters. We talk about hunger and food security issues in Sonoma County. And about every 6 weeks, we do a block where every day a client comes in and meets with the kids. And they're sitting in a big circle in our meeting room. There's 15 to 18 kids usually there. And the client who came in this week, he's a hepatitis C client, and there's now happily a treatment for hepatitis C. I don't know if you guys know
that.
Oh,
there is. I did not know that.
Yes, and the good news is there's a treatment. The bad news is it's kind of like chemo for a year. So it's very, very debilitating treatment. And so we've been working with West County Health Center and actually working with a lot of Hep C patients while they're going through that treatment. And he's a single dad, and he told his whole story to the kids. And one of the things he had was one day this summer, we had a lot of kids in the kitchen, too many kids to be in the kitchen, if you can know what that's like. Yeah. And sometimes it's like too many is worse than not enough. And so one of our mentor chefs is also an art therapist and had taken a group of them in the meeting room, and they had made handmade cards for all the clients.
Oh,
and
nice.
He had his card with him, and it had like a rainbow on it in the back. It had just this note about, I'm sending love and wishes to you for your healing or something. And he had carried that ever since he got it. He's been carrying it with him everywhere. And he thanked the kids for making that and for that. He said, I can feel the love in every bite whenever I eat the food, and just thanking them. So that happens on a regular basis, which of course is really amazing. Great. For the kids. And the other thing I wanted to share is that the teens last Friday night made a 100-mile feast. And they've been working on it for about 5 or 6 weeks, where they've been talking about what's local, what's in season right now, what can we get within 100 miles. And then every day of the week took a different part of the menu. So the Monday kids did appetizers, the Tuesday kids side dishes, the Wednesday kids dessert, and the Thursday kids the main dish. And they brainstormed and then came up with a menu, procured all the food themselves, and put on a feast for about 60 on Friday night for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I got there about 6:15, and they had set these beautiful long tables in the meeting room. They had beautiful pumpkins filled with flowers on the tables. The tables were all set with, napkins folded in the middle. It was gorgeous. And there were 55 teenagers holding hands all the way around the meeting room with about 6 adults. And it was the most inspiring sight. I don't know. There's something about it that 55 teenagers chose to spend their Friday night cooking for each other and hanging out at Sirius. And I just thought it was just amazing, and we're going to now do it on a, annual basis, the, 100-mile harvest dinner.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of teens afterwards said, can we do a dinner like this for our parents? So we're going to do that in the summer.
Great.
Yeah. So it was really fabulous. And they had whole grain gourmet pizzas with Redwood Hill goat cheese on them, and pumpkin soup, and Petaluma poultry, rosy chicken stuffed with kale and trumpet royale mushrooms from Gourmet Mushrooms, and it was just fabulous. It was just an amazing meal.
Can I ask where the grains came from?
The grains came from two places. There's a place up in Mendocino, and then Front Porch Farm is doing grains, and they send them up to Mendocino to be ground. But so it was a sourdough, you know, stone ground pizza.
There's some very interesting stuff going on with grains around here now.
There's a big resurgence.
Yeah, there's Community Grains, which is outside the 100-mile limit.
Mm-hmm.
But Community Grains are Craig Ponsford from, you know, who's the founding baker of Artisan Bakers,
mm-hmm.
and Bob Klein of Oliveto.
Mm, nice.
They've contracted with local grain growers, mostly in northern Central California, but who have their own mills,
mm-hmm.
and they're using antique grains, and they're making, they have a red wheat polenta.
Mm, nice.
They have some pretty astonishing whole wheat pasta. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you are like me and have had just the vile whole wheat pasta, mm-hmm. that was the only thing available for so long, this is a revelation.
Mm.
It's really something. Yeah. So, and Craig Ponsford, you know, has opened a new place down in San Rafael. It's about as big as a postage stamp.
Mm.
And he calls it like Ponsford's. Do you remember, Mike? Yeah. It's like Ponsford's Bakery and experimental, you know, I don't know. It's not something easy. It's Ponsford's Place. That's right. It's Ponsford's Place. That's the website. But it's got a longer subtitle. And he's doing some very interesting things.
Cool.
He sent me, last December, he was on Mouthful, and he brought this round loaf of walnut bread. It looked like you could, you know, kill somebody with it. It just looked like it was going to be heavy. And I was busy, and I was flying to New Orleans, and I took it with me. We ate that bread for 2 weeks at my daughter's down south. We had the last pieces on New Year's Day, and it was so good.
Oh, that's amazing.
I'm getting sidetracked here. I'm so excited about the things that are happening
There is some
with
great
whole
stuff
grains.
Happening.
It's just totally different than anything I thought possible.
Yeah, they got all their vinegar, all their olive oil, all their salt, everything local.
Mm-hmm.
So there was everything in the meal, and I think the whole dinner cost $28 or something.
Because
they got on the phone and called people and procured and had that whole experience.
Yeah.
This is
I
great.
Have a friend that's pulling out 3 acres of vines to put in grain.
Oh, that's great.
Well, that's great, yeah.
That's quite a change.
Where's that?
Terry and Carolyn Harrison up in Healdsburg.
Uh-huh.
That's great.
And he's dissatisfied with wine and vines, and off they're going.
That's the one thing we need here is more grain.
Yeah. It's the missing
link. We really want to eat in Sonoma County.
Yeah, well, you know, Lou Preston has been growing grains for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And also Deborah Walton of Canvas Ranch. And she's grown farro. I think she's had two harvests of farro or emmer, which is the local name.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that grow quinoa. It does marginally well. It's very, very difficult to harvest.
Right.
You have to do all this processing and stuff to take the bitterness out. But so I know some people are growing quinoa, amaranth, of course, people grow around here. But you know, wheat is a different thing. So.
Yeah. So when was Ceres founded?
March 2007 was the first cooking that we did, and it was in the church kitchen at the Sebastopol Community Church.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's interesting now is a couple of years ago, people started calling and asking us to help them replicate the model.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of this year, we'll actually be in seven communities around the country.
Really?
Including Nashville, Tennessee, Geneva, Illinois, Santa Cruz now, Bay Village, Ohio, Summit, New Jersey, and then Napa and Marin. And we're in conversation with another, at least that many communities. But what's interesting now is they come to, you know, this fabulous building that we have, 3,000 square feet in this gorgeous kitchen. And, you know, the first thing people think is, I couldn't do this.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, it didn't look like this 5 years ago, let me tell you.
Now, did you document how you started so people can see that?
Yeah, yes. And we have photos and stuff.
Okay, good.
You know, so, but I tell them about the chaos of six kids who don't know anything in the kitchen and, you know, three. We cooked for 3.5 hours, and we were cooking by the end of that year for 10 families. And we were doing 3 entrees, a soup, a salad, and a dessert. And most of the kids had, I mean, now we have kids who've been in the program for 5 years, and we have lots of kids who've been in the program for a couple of years. So it could practically run without the adults most days. You know, there's lots of new kids. But, you know, in the early days, no one knew anything. And I was running around like a dervish, you know, trying to keep everybody productive and not, you know, burning themselves or cutting their fingers off. Sure. And we're in this tiny little kitchen, and, you know, it was crazy. It looks very seamless and organized now, but it wasn't always like that. I try to make sure people realize that didn't start like this.
Mm. Now, what's the story that led to getting this fabulous building?
Oh, that was a great one. I was being interviewed by the city of Sebastopol in the summer of 2010. They were doing some promotional videos on their little, you know, they have some kind of YouTube channel or something. And Kendine Webster, who's the head of the planning department, was there. And I was doing my spiel about Ceres and talking about what we did. And after about 10 or 15 minutes, he looked at me and he said, "Could you guys use a building?" And, you know, we had known for at least a year, 2 years probably at that point, that we needed to find another space. We'd been at capacity in the kitchen we were in. And so literally like 10 minutes later, we went and looked at it. And
the building existed.
The building existed. The building is next to the fire station on Jewel. And it had been used for a program that was training adults with disabilities. And the county had moved that program to Santa Rosa 2 or 3 years before this, back in 2010, so 2007 or 2008, and gave the building to the city. And it's part of the Ives Park parcel. And the city didn't have any reason, they didn't have anything to do with it, and they didn't have the money to remodel it. And when we first were going to move in, I kept saying to people, "We're moving into the building next to the fire station." And they were like, "What building next to the fire station?" Because it was this ugly brown building back from the road, down this little knoll. All the outside was asphalt and ivy, and it was just an eyesore. It had windows that had metal things that shut down over them, and those big industrial. Yeah. I mean, it looked and felt like a prison. The inside was no better, and people were like, "What building?" They didn't even realize there was a building there, and so we went and looked at it, and I brought a couple of contractors over, and my main question was, "Can you guys make this beautiful?" Because, I mean, we are doing healing programs for people who are dealing with life-threatening illness, and you want to go to some place that's uplifting and nourishing and has healing energy. And they kept saying they could. And so we partnered with a group called Community Builders Group, awesome organization in Santa Rosa, a group of contractors who have gotten together and do building projects for nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they serve as a general contractor, and they go out to all of their relationships in the building trades and all of their relationships in the building materials trades, and they get people to donate or discount. So we gutted the building, put in a 1,200 square foot commercial kitchen, gutted the outside, resided it, did concrete work, did all the plantings, everything for $425,000.
Wow.
And we have $350,000 at least in kind on it. And so the project took about a year. We moved in not quite a year ago. We cooked our first meals Thanksgiving of last year. So that was our first week cooking in the kitchen, and we've been there for the last year. It's made a huge difference. For one thing, we added a fourth cooking day, which we couldn't do. Between that and the garden, we've doubled the number of kids involved in the program from a year ago. Mm-hmm. We've doubled the number of teen hours. We've got a 40% increase in meals going out. We're going to add to that again next year. And it's just become this center. So people drop by all the time, and, you know, it's really been fabulous. Yeah, it's been a great project.
Now, are you able to fulfill all the requests you get for meals, or do you have a waiting list?
We have, I think, a short waiting list right now. We've really been inundated with calls the last 3 weeks, but we're expanding. So because of that, we're pretty much able to keep track. I mean, we've gone from serving 45 clients when we moved in to serve a week to serving 70 clients a week now, and we're going to move to 80 by early next year. At that point, that kitchen will be maxed. because of the size and because we have such a commitment to the youth development part of what we do, that it's not a production kitchen in that way of just cramming meals out, that we're also teaching and engaging youth. We're in conversation with somebody about satelliting in Sonoma Valley, which was always my idea, that once we max the kitchen in Sebastopol, that even though we serve the whole county, we don't serve the outlying areas as well. But we just can't, and we certainly don't engage as many teens or as many volunteers in those areas. So we're talking to them. We're also talking, David Goodman and I are talking about the new Redwood Empire Food Bank up in Windsor, and they're planning on putting in a kitchen there and possibly doing a satellite there that would serve the northern part of the county. So that's the idea in terms of Sonoma County, is we'll satellite probably two or three places, and that will expand. And I mean, we're never going to be able to serve all the need. There's 3,000 new cancer diagnoses a year in Sonoma County, and that doesn't include all the Hep C, ALS, all the other things that we deal with. So it's always the tip of the iceberg, which is why we have our education programs and the cookbook and all those other ways to be able to help people.
What an amazing thing.
It's been an amazing ride. I mean, it's certainly way beyond what I mean, I certainly never imagined we'd be helping people around the country, you know, start this. And I think it's a testament to a couple of things. One, you know, people have such a deep desire to be connected to one another. And they're, and in our culture these days, there's not that many ways. We're all kind of busy in our lives. And we've created this model that provides so many opportunities for people to participate. We have 325 active volunteers right now, and you know, there's lots of simple ways for people to make a difference. And I think we're all really looking for something hopeful and positive. And you know, Ceres is about. It's interesting because I spent a week in Nashville, and it's a very, very different culture there. And there's a lot of places where our value systems don't intersect, but around this, they completely get it. So the deep value about caring for one another, the deep value about giving our young people meaningful work to do, the deep value about the power of food for healing, like that's translates everywhere. So I think there's something really, we've tapped into something that's really core and universal, and that's part of what I think has allowed it to attract kind of the energy and support that it has.
Yeah, it's one of those things, as soon as you hear about Ceres, it's like, well, of course.
Right, of course.
Why didn't this exist all along?
Right, I know. Yeah, the universe is very, very smart.
Well, Thomas, I want to bring you back into the conversation. How long have you been at John Ash?
A little over 4 years now.
Oh, it's been that long.
Yeah, it's gone quick.
It flies.
Yeah, really. It really does.
So talk to us a little bit about the restaurant right now. I know there's, I just got some press releases about something going on in the lounge.
We have the front room bar and lounge. We're trying to get that more and more. It's more casual, so we
best lampshades in the county.
Yeah, really. And actually, the woman that makes them lives around the corner from my father out in the East Bay.
Really?
And her husband used to be my little sister's boyfriend in
now,
high school.
Was that coincidence?
No, it's crazy.
Was that coincidence?
It was a coincidence. They were in the restaurant when I first started working at John Ash, and the guy, I hadn't seen him for 30 years, and 25 or so, and he comes up, Tom, are you Tom? Eric. And then it turns out his wife makes the lampshades for...
She makes it them out of, like, antique lingerie.
Yeah, exactly. She makes great stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, but we're trying to just get that more going, because it's more casual, the front room. We've got 80 seats or so with views of the vineyards out back, so we totally, you know, consistently revamping the menu, trying to get lighter stuff and more fun stuff for the happy hour and stuff like that. And then we have our gardens that are going great. We have probably altogether maybe 2 acres or a little bit more, you know, to the whole property. We have 100 acres all together, mostly vines, but we get more and more out of the garden.
Like, yeah, you're growing quite a bit.
Yeah, we're trying to. I've got a gardener that I'm not full time, but like 30 hours a week. She's just growing all produce. Tomatoes are just finished up with the sunchoke. She's getting those out now. Salsa fuse we've got going. We have 80 fig trees. We've got berries, you know, raspberries, and strawberries. Now, of course, chard season's coming up, chard and kale,
which is all coming up.
But it's great to have the opportunity just to go out and pick for our specials and also for our regular menu items. She's been there for a year, so the more she's there, the better we get at knowing exactly what we need out of our own gardens. Also, we have, you know, Kendall Jackson around the corner. We get produce from them. We get produce from Schoen Farms, which is only a couple minutes away. A lot of small vendors up in Healdsburg and Sonoma County, Sebastopol, I think Gourmet Mushroom. There's so many great things to get here right in the area. You know, you don't have to drive far at all.
Yeah. When it comes to your clientele, do you have... How much of a mix is it of visitors staying at Vintner's Inn and locals?
Depends on the time of year and the time of week, for sure. And when the hotel's busy, of course, most of them will come at least one evening to the restaurant for dinner. And they might come to the bar a couple of nights just for a snack before they go out. And, of course, in summer, they're going out more and more. Gets to the colder time of the year, they tend to stay more at the restaurant and check that out. So in the week, it might be 80% locals in the front room, and the restaurant might be 50%. Mm-hmm. But it really changes totally one that crushes. Of course, you have a lot of tourists in town.
Sure.
We only have 44 rooms, and if we have a wedding on the weekend, maybe 30 rooms are for the wedding, and so they'll go to the event center for the wedding meal, and they might go to John Ashby, they might go up to Healdsburg because it's so beautiful, up just wine tasting and go to dinner somewhere around the whole area. So it's a great mix with our guests in all the restaurants around the area.
Do you get a lot of people coming in and saying they'd like to talk to John?
People still do sometimes. They ask, if John hasn't been here for like
13 years.
Probably 20 years for sure, but he sold it 13 years ago. He's been out, but he's still, we kept the name, and when I first started, the Corondas were talking about changing the name.
Right, yeah.
But it's a hard thing to do, I think. It costs a lot of money for one, and everybody knows John Ash Restaurant.
Exactly.
John Ash Restaurant. And that's where we're trying to get the front room that's own identity, which helps people, see next to the Vintners Inn is a front room. We don't even say John Ash, so people will get more and more into that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, it's a great place to be for sure.
Okay. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful. We'll be right back. Yes, it's Mouthful. We just needed to stretch our limbs a little bit there. My guests this evening are Thomas Schmidt, executive chef of John Ash & Company, Catherine Crouch, founder and
executive director
of Ceres Community Project, and Robert Corrick, writer. Author, anything else? Gardener?
Many things, yes, but mostly author right now.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm going to get that microphone a little closer to your mouth.
Mouthful.
There you go. real quickly, we're going to shift over to talk about dirt and other things, gardening, because I have some questions about that at this time of year. Back to Artisano. How do people... Tickets are $75
each. $75 in advance. and $90 at the door.
And if you want to go to both, it's $140 for the pair of tickets.
$45, I believe, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Artisano.com.
Yeah.
Org.
Org. Artisano.org.
We'll check.
I think so.
No? Mike's going to check here. I think it's .com, but I could be wrong. But yeah, you can get tickets. You can get tickets right online. And if you have the paper, or if you read my column, I wrote about this in Friday's Mouthful the column, not the radio show. We can get you really confused here.
It's artisano.org.
Yeah. Oh, org. It's .org. Okay.
Well,
so yeah, you just click through and you can buy tickets there. In the years past, has Artisano sold out? Do we know?
I don't know. 400 is the max, and that we've done a lot of PR, and tickets are selling really well, so I'd really encourage people to get tickets.
Uh-huh. I think last year's 300 or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a great afternoon.
Uh-huh. I mean, if we knew people or they're going to come, we could even do more than 400. We have a tent on the one side of the event center to even get more.
Oh, you could accommodate more.
We did the tent just for Christmas time for parties, and we did put it up earlier because of this event. Uh-huh. Last year, we did some of the demonstrations out there from Donald LeRae from Relish up in
Hillsburg.
Up in Hillsburg. Uh-huh. So did all that, and we had cooking demonstrations out there, so it's a lot of space there for sure.
Oh, yeah. Great. And also, I should say, next Saturday is also Winter Blast at South A Street, SOFA, south of A. Upcoming, not even upcoming, it's already there. It's just a great arts district in Santa Rosa, and Winter Blast is such a good party. If you like to dress flamboyantly, but you have a job where you can't or something, dress however you want for Winter Blast. Anything to do going on at an art gallery in south of A Street, you can dress however you want. It's really fun. One year they had a lot of the vehicles from the hand car regatta. There were just some crazy vehicles and, you know, food trucks and vendors of tamales and always surprises. So, and Winter Blast, I think it's either free or it's $15 for a glass, and then, you know, you can walk around if you don't want to drink. But it's something like that. But you can go to both. Artisano during the day.
You can have dinner.
You can even have dinner.
Have the
and
harvest dinner.
The end of,
and then
Winter
go
Blast.
Drink and hang out at the art gallery.
Yes, but Winter Blast is really, really fun. We've talked about that on Mouthful, and we will again. I love that district. So for tickets for Artisano, artisano.org. Can they stop by anywhere? Is there anywhere they can stop by to get tickets?
They can buy them, I believe, at the Whole Foods at Cottingtown, and they can buy them at the Ceres office. And
the Ceres office next to
the fire station in downtown Sebastopol, in the building in front where the big B sculpture is. And I think if you go on the website, there's probably some other places
this
as well.
Relish
up in Healdsburg, you can buy tickets there. Yeah.
Sounds good.
And the tickets are $75 for the tasting, $75 for the dinner, or $140
for both.
Great. Thank you.
And then make sure to bring pocket change your credit card because, you know,
for the auction.
It's really fun. Auctions are really fun.
You get some great deals.
You
get some great deals, but you can also just really get competitive.
Yeah. And we're saying,
a couple times,
come do your holiday shopping.
Absolutely.
Because we've got great stuff there and some beautiful getaways and some tickets to Disneyland. And so no matter if you have kids or no kids, there's going to be some great stuff
between
there.
This auction, things like Winter Blast, and all of the crafts fairs that are taking place, you don't have to go into a mall or national chain even once this whole season.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then your money stays in the community and it benefits great organizations like the Ceres Community Project. I want to bring Robert all the way in. And if you guys want to stay and chat, you know, it's absolutely fine, but we're going to focus on dirt for a while. So if you feel like you really want to get home and see your new little, how old are you? You have a new baby that's, what, 2.5 now?
No, 20 months, but my wife and baby are in Germany for a whole month.
So you want to hang out with us.
Yeah, another 10 days. It's been a hard time. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Thank God for Skype.
Yes. Okay. Well, there you go. So you wanted to talk about dirt. Why?
Oh, I wanted to talk about how dirt produces food that's got nutrition, but is it better in organic or is it better in conventional? Mm-hmm. There was a study that just came out recently. We were talking with Catherine and I were talking about it, that down in Stanford, it said, well, there's no difference. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, well, let's look into this some more. And I found that it is hit and miss about whether or not organic produce has more nutrition than conventional produce. But we eat, of course, we're eating the organic for a whole lot of other reasons.
Yeah, the thing that I thought was so weird about that study is it seemed a really, first of all, selfish and very, very narrow perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, I don't even know if I've thought of it that way. There's so many reasons. I mean, I'm not just going to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. I want to take care of the earth. I want to take care of everything. I want everything to be healthy. Why would I just want to break down nutrients?
Right. It wasn't very holistic.
Measure them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was weird.
Yeah. And my friends were sure there was a hidden agenda behind it, but I couldn't find any hidden money, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
It seemed to be legitimate as far as Stanford's funding.
I actually heard that there's some Monsanto funding for one of the departments at, or some institute at Stanford that was behind the study.
Oh, interesting. Doesn't
it
surprise me.
You can't get away from Monsanto, huh?
No, it's really frightening.
Yeah.
Really frightening. Well, here's one thing I want you to throw in the mix as you talk about it. And I know that you know Nan Kohler. We all know Nan Kohler from Rainbows and Farm. A couple years ago, she gave me this newspaper article, or magazine article, and I did not have a chance to track it down, about the health of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, first of all, we have the word dirt, and so it's dirty. You know, those two, it's just like fat. Oh, fat is going to make me fat, and that's ridiculous. But that correlation, and this article was all about the great benefits of earth, of dirt to humans, including the fact that if you got some in your mouth, you weren't going to die. You know,
exactly.
You weren't going to get E. coli or something. That dirt is actually healthy in a whole variety of ways. So I want to throw that into the mix.
There was a few years back a woman that came to Santa Rosa at the art museum. She had a dirt tasting.
Yeah, she was like Laura Parker.
I don't remember her name.
Something like Laura Parker.
Yeah,
maybe Laura Parker.
And
she was on. She did a mini one here.
Oh, great! Yeah, because farmers in the old days, where I grew up in Missouri, they taste the soil to figure out fertility, mm-hmm. and pH in particular, so they could tell if it's sweet or sour and mm-hmm. what they want to do with that. So it's been used as an indicator for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't eat dirt myself. I've given up eating dirt.
Well, yeah, I don't know anyone anymore that eats dirt. I haven't seen any little kids doing that in a while. But I think some people, some adults, Americans particularly, it seems, are so terrified of a little dirt on their turnip or whatever. They think, you know, scrub it clean, that there's just this horrible thing that's going to happen if you get a little piece.
Right,
you.
Right.
And it's like, this doesn't really make any sense.
Well, you might be a little concerned if it's conventional, basically.
Right, yes. Well, that's where I was hoping you were going to lead us.
Right. Now they have new guidelines for compost for organic growers, and it really makes for a healthier compost. You don't have to worry about the leftover manure in the compost mm-hmm. on the produce. I think that it's hard to justify whether or not organic produce is more nutritious than conventional, but it's worth considering. But basically, we were talking about the holistic approach that they didn't have at Stanford,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's really important to me, to make sure that you have a whole healthy ecosystem, both people and soil.
Yes.
And plants.
Yeah.
But I do have one funny thing I want to read.
Okay, sure, absolutely.
Okay, so I was looking into this thing about nutrition, and here's one that came out of Newcastle University. They looked at a wide range of produce, and they came up with some weird things, and they said, okay, vitamin C is 6% higher, and they had other things that were higher. But here's what they came up at the end. They estimated that the potential increase in life expectancy that would be achieved by switching from conventional to organic fruit or produce without changing the amount of amount consumed per day was 17 days for women and 25 days for men. Now we can discuss why if there's a difference between men and women, but I want to know how much it costs. I figure by that time it's costing you $12,000 a day if you're eating organic all your life.
You know, this breaking things down into those, I guess, discrete measurable parts.
Right, exactly.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But there is some revealing stuff about, like, they did an 80-year study from 1914 to the present for apples, and the calcium dropped 50% just about in the average conventional produce. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of decline in nutrition
over the years. And you can see with eggs. You can see conventionally raised eggs and eggs that are, pastured, healthy,
right.
You know, organically fed. There's much different nutrient content
right.
in eggs.
Yeah. Right.
And they do taste different, contrary to what some people have been saying on national radio shows lately. They taste a lot different.
They taste different, for sure.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. You know, the other thing I think about is... You know, we talk about nutritional content, but the pesticide impact on health. There's such research now around environmental health impacts, especially for cancer, mm-hmm. that you've got to have that in the equation
exactly.
when you're talking conventional organic. I mean, that's why we're so strongly supportive of organic agriculture, because there's such strong correlations now mm-hmm. With cancer and with other health impacts as well.
Yeah.
We don't want those pesticides in us, on the farm workers, or in our water.
In our water,
or anywhere
in the
else.
Air as exactly. we're driving by. And it just seems that the people who want them there, the people who are making the profit, have endless money to fund these so-called studies to tell people nothing's wrong and they should eat that. And it's just, you know, where is the breaking point going to come? And is it going to come in time?
Yeah.
Right. Whether or not it'll come in time is very important.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing I've noticed, and this has impacted me directly, my daughter had thyroid cancer, as did my niece. Mm. Both girls raised in Sonoma County by people like me, eating Sonoma County food, fairly conscientious. The one risk factor that they've always checked for in the past, someone with thyroid cancer would have either worked in a place where they were exposed to radiation, or a kid would have a father who worked where he was exposed. And there's this huge, and I'm not the, my daughter and my niece are by far not anomalies. There's this huge increase in thyroid cancer among people in their late teens through their 20s. What is that about? Mm. This is something really new. Yeah. And the doctor who treated her at Stanford, little elf of a guy, unfortunately retiring, and he had 5 or more decades of experience.
Wow.
And I asked him, it's like, why? And he said, no one will tell you this, but it has to be in my environmental factors. It has to be. And he started talking about the environmental estrogens, mm-hmm. Plastic and microwaves, plastic and, water absorbing things from plastic, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have so many drugs. We have antidepressants, birth control pills.
All showing up in the water system.
Yeah. In our water system, affecting the fish. How could this not be affecting humans?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what do we do? What do we do with our soil? Which is why, this is the time of year that I think people think, oh, my garden's going to just go fallow for a while. I don't have to think of it for a while. Are there things we should be doing to make our soil healthy for when we, if we plant in January or March or whatever?
Well, the basic thing is mulch.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
That's
easy.
Yeah, it's easy to fall back onto. Now's a good time to incorporate some organic matter into the soil, but mulch help protect it from the rains.
Uh-huh.
I just planted fava beans, and I'm going to mulch those this weekend. Mm-hmm. But they're one of my favorite crops for both improving the soil and then eating.
Yeah, you improve the soil, and then you have those nice fresh favas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to improve the soil the most with fava beans, unfortunately, you got to cut them out before 10% of bloom. And that's where you get the most nitrogen for the soil.
Oh.
If you go and let them grow to maturity, most of the nitrogen is in the bean. That's why they're so full of protein.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a trade-off which you want. But you still get some nitrogen in the soil when the plants mature and has beans. Mm-hmm. So
you need to plant a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
Right.
More than you need.
10%
more
than
you need.
Right.
Yeah. Cut some.
Right.
Let the others go.
Right. Yeah. It's a great compost material.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the book. What's your most recent book?
The one I did most recently was Roots Demystified.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about how people are preoccupied with what's above the soil when what's happening below the soil is as important or more important mm-hmm. for a healthy plant. And so there's a lot of misinformation and a lot of things that people don't even think about.
You have some really fascinating illustrations in that.
Yeah, there's a guy named Dr. Weaver who spent his whole life in Nebraska around the 20s and 30s digging trenches to expose the root systems of vegetables and Nebraska prairie lands. But I got the ones on vegetables, and he would work it like an archaeological dig where it was down to the finest hairs, and then he would draw it. And so in the case of like lettuce, the roots would get as wide as 3.5 feet wide in this good soil.
This lettuce and then this
What's above ground has no indication of what's going on below ground. Yeah. So like the horseradish that he grew was, the horseradish foliage is what, 2 feet, maybe 2.5 feet. The roots went down 18 feet.
Wow. It's amazing.
And he dug down that far. So I tried to research if the guy was ever married.
No time for anything else. If
right. But I couldn't figure it out.
When did the Lavender Book fit into all this?
The Lavender Book came out, 98, I think, from Chronicle Books. It was my most successful book for another publisher. It happened to start and begin with the new revival in lavender, the new craze. And mm-hmm. I was fortunate that I was on the front end of
the
curve.
You were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what people don't realize is it takes 3 years to get a book from concept to on the market. So in that sense, I was really ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed the book a lot, and they did a good job of producing it. They did a great job of selling it, and people really responded to it. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of great feedback.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fun book.
And it was the first, I must add, it was the first book on lavender that had recipes for every course of the meal, not just lavender ice cream. Every book had some version of lavender ice cream. That's nice. But we did appetizers, entrees, et cetera, et cetera.
You have to talk about the chicken
griddled prasada. Yeah.
Chicken prasada. That's, I did it. I think I used that recipe in one of my books with your permission.
Great.
But I think I did it with quail.
Oh, I think I did it
with boned quail.
Oh, okay. That would be nice to try.
Yeah, it works really well. But tell people how you do it.
Okay.
This is fascinating and so messy.
It's fun. It's very entertaining. It has to be done basically outdoors in a barbecue. And I grow what's called green lavender. It's a very different type of lavender, but its flavor is so much more intense. And it's not as harsh as the Spanish lavender. And you can't use English lavender because it's, quote, too soapy when you grill it. Yeah. So you have to use the relative of Spanish lavender. It's called green lavender. So I harvest about a 5-gallon bucket of that. And I've got a fire going, and it's heating a cast iron skillet really hot. Get it really hot. I put down about 2 inches or more of lavender over the whole skillet. Then the chicken. Then 2 more inches of lavender on top of the chicken. Then a cookie sheet. And then 5 or 10 bricks. That's where the prasada part comes up. And there's different versions of they do in restaurants. But so then it's cooking. And the fun part is halfway through, you want to turn it. So you take the bricks off and the cookie sheet off. And you take tongs and you just kind of flop the whole damn thing over in one big move.
There's been enough juice released from the chicken that the whole thing, it does stay together like a sandwich.
It is just like a sandwich.
Yeah.
And you can flop it over and really impress your friends. And then you put the bricks back on. But the whole thing cooks in less than 4 minutes, basically 5 minutes at the most, because of the heat. And the oils of the lavender just permeate every cell of the chicken. And it was my most requested component of a barbecue every year. They went, oh, come on, do the chicken.
you got to try it with quail sometime.
Okay.
And tell us about the bean hole.
Oh, bean hole was the second most popular thing. What I have is a brick-lined hole that's about 6 inches wider than a cast iron pot with the lid, you know, it's got the lid.
Dutch oven.
And so one night I built a lot of coals. And make a fire for about 4 or 5 hours to get a huge batch of coals. In the meantime, I've prepared my beans. I pressure cook them about 80% done, and then add all the spices. And the secret spice is coffee, about a tablespoon of coffee.
And what kind of beans?
I've used every kind of beans. Yeah, it doesn't seem to matter. It's just the cooking time is different. But so you take half the coals out, put it in a metal wheelbarrow, put the Dutch oven down on top of the remaining coals, then put the coals back on top of the Dutch oven, and then put a foot of sand. So the hole itself is about 18, 20 inches wide and almost 2 feet deep. And so that they cook there for 24 hours. So you have a barbecue one night with some friends. And then the next night you have a different set of friends and you dig it up. You just hand them a shovel and they have to dig down through the sand to get to the Dutch oven. And it's still hot to the touch. Uh-huh. And then you open it up. And not only did it taste good, it's another theatrical way to eat outside.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. I haven't done a bean hole yet, but one of these days I'm going to. And we are almost out of time. Time flies on Mouthful. Yeah. I have to say, we did get a phone call. It's sort of the rule here is... I don't take phone calls partly because, I mean, I don't take phone calls live just because, oh, I have to twist myself like a pretzel to make it work. I won't go into all those details. And I've also polled people who listen to Mouthful, and they say, usually we don't want to ask a question. We just want to hear your guess. But somebody did call to say that they thought it was really important to add that organic food is just not about the nutrition. It's about not getting the chemicals and the pesticides. And I think they must have been dialing when you were talking about
Right,
absolutely. That is extremely important. And I think that it's... You know, it's just important to take a holistic view of things. We're never going to have a fully sustainable environment if we try to break things down into these little segments and justify this segment and take it all apart. You know,
it's one big
loop.
We're
all connected.
Yeah. In the forest, there's trees that need the fungi to grow into their roots to get phosphorus, but then the fungi grow into other fungi, so the fungi are meeting each other and growing together, and then they're feeding the fertility to the trees, so we only have one entity in the whole forest.
Exactly. Yeah, and I even found out that gophers do good.
Yeah.
Not necessarily here, but gophers are what brought back Mount St. Helens
exactly
so quickly.
They transfer that beneficial fungus.
Yeah, and they also move the lupin seeds and they aerate the soil.
Yep.
So, you know,
they're great
anything
cultivators.
That's natural,
right?
You know, I think there's a place for it.
Well, I did a little e-book that's on my website. It's called The Myths. And so it has stuff like that where you think of gophers as only bad. Well, here's dispelling the myth that they're only bad. And here's some fun things about them. Mm-hmm. And the reason they tunnel constantly is their teeth continue to grow.
And they have to.
And if they don't tunnel, they would curl back and impale their own brain.
Yeah.
So that's where they're...
And we're going to leave you with that image because we are out of time here on Mouthful. Again, Artisano taking place next Saturday. The walk-around tasting and art display and auction 12 to 4 at the Vintners Inn. The Harvest Dinner starts at 5 o'clock at John Ash & Company. Go to artisano.org for tickets. Thanks so much to all of you for
being
here. This was a great hour.
Great. Yeah, thank you.
And meet me back here next week when we will be talking to Paul Ferrari of AG Ferrari about some of the new things that great company is doing, including for Thanksgiving. Have a great week.
Dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher said. To the Lord, let the praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat.
And the mama's in the kitchen.
Oh, yes,
she's been there all day. I know she's cooking something good, so let's bow his praise.
To the Lord.
This story,
well,
our children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.